This is a podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn.
Do you ever get the feeling that you're being watched? Well, maybe you are. From above. By a drone. What was once something out of a science fiction story is now something that is flying around your neighbourhood. Maybe even you have one. What can you do with it? Film what your neighbours are doing? Muster some cattle, perhaps? Deliver some pizzas? Maybe flying a drone is to these days what flying a kite was in the past, something to do down at the local park. Or perhaps you've watched one of those many Hollywood movies like Skyfall or The Wolf of Wall Street or Jurassic World that are increasingly using aerial footage shot using drones. They can be great at capturing cities or landscapes from up high. Or maybe you've heard the debates about whether drones should be used in warfare. Those unmanned aerial machines have been used by America to strike targets in the Middle East, control from afar to avoid any casualties. Well, casualties to the people flying them, not the casualties, sadly, on the ground. Drones have many applications. But what are they? And where are they going in the future, and how close is that future? That's what we're discussing this morning on our Talking Point. Our guest is Javan Shah, Professor of Sensor Systems at the University of South Australia and an expert on unmanned aerial vehicles, better known as drones. Professor, a very good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Rod. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Let's start with a question from one of our texters. Mark has sent in, is there any way of identifying who owns a particular drone by way of identifying a user, maybe an app or whatever, to locate where that user is coming from? So if somebody is, you know, flying their drone over your house, is there any way that you have of finding out who it is?
It might be difficult. I would imagine that a pretty good hacker might be able to access things about what network something's on. It's conceivably possible for drones that use Wi-Fi as the command link. So the answer is possibly, but it would require a fair bit of skill, I would think. And identifying exactly who it was might require trying to penetrate that network and go quite deep into their device that's controlling the drone. So it'd be hard for the average person.
All right, but I mean, you know how all aircraft in Australia have an identifying number. Is there no identifying number for drones in this country?
The drone itself will have things like a MAC number, which is like the unique identifier for its network connection if it's Wi-Fi. But little drones that you might buy at a sort of electronics retailer are sadly, no, not so much.
Not only electronic retailer, they sell them at the post office.
Yeah, exactly. It's everywhere. But if it's one of those smaller, cheaper ones, they'll be somewhere nearby. I'm sure a bit of, unless they want to lose their drone, they've only probably got 10 or 15 minutes, so you could just watch where it goes.
Well, they do get lost, though, don't they? And Mark in Warhope is with us. Good morning, Mark. Hang on a minute, Mark.
And you're okay.
Yeah, there we go. Mark, good morning.
Mark, there?
Yes, mate.
Sorry.
So your nephew got a drone for Christmas. What happened?
He got a drone for Christmas, and he had it up in the air. I think technically his dad was flying it at the time. Anyway, it was all of 15 minutes before it got lost in high grass, and put it this way, they went back home to Sydney at that point. I think it was about 2 weeks later when I eventually found it.
Okay, so at least you got it back.
The grass was about knee high, so his father wasn't necessarily a good flyer. But I've only been thinking, actually, and then I worked previously as a nurse at a jail, and again, they're illegal around there. Finally, the other one has been spotting it for shark stuff at the local near the beach here. But one day, I thought it was a drone, and it turns out that it was actually a sea eagle and it caught a fish. So you can then get confused of whether it's a drone or a bird.
All righty, we'll get to the sharks in a moment. Mark, thanks very much. So Javan Shah is our guest from the University of South Australia. Just a couple of things that Mark mentioned. One is, if you do lose them, I mean, do they give out some sort of beep or whatever that you can track them down? Is there a black box in these drones? How do you actually find them?
Depends on the model. Certainly, some of the commercial ones, when they're on the ground, will start beeping. They can play with their motors to create a kind of high-pitched noise out of them. That can help. But believe it or not, exactly that situation has happened to us on a major defence trial at night, landing in long grass and having 50 people looking for it. So that kind of thing is not unique to civilian usage.
I hope they're not the people designing our submarines. Now, the jail situation, they're illegal around jails, but what if you're flying one over a jail? It might be a small one, could drop drugs, other contraband, whatever. What, I mean, do they shoot them down? How can they even stop them?
There are some technologies emerging that that can actually disable particular drones in the air. Obviously, in a situation like a prison, you may have people trying to get contraband in there, so you don't want them to get actually in and do the delivery. So you can actually block the command control link, and a lot of drones basically cut power if they sense that they've lost the connection either to the GPS network or to their to whoever is controlling it. Okay. So it's like a safety feature, but the drone disabling technologies can actually counter that. Okay. The question is how automatic they are and whether they're on all of the time.
How easy are they to fly? I've got to say I've never flown one, but if you do get one for Christmas or your birthday or just you see it at the post office and think, yeah, I want a drone, how difficult is it to learn how to fly one of these things?
They're pretty good now. Outdoors, usually there's a fairly elaborate installation process that's mainly on your telephone. And after that, they lock onto satellite network. So a lot of them quite simply just, you tell them to take off and they take off and they fly at a modest altitude, maybe just a few metres. And then you sort of push them around with the joysticks. They when you take your hands off the joystick, they just stop. So sort of quadrotor type.
Drop down?
Multi-rotors.
If they just hover?
Just hover and wait for you to tell it what to do next. There are more sophisticated modes of control of drones, but a lot of the smaller drones just operate like that, and it works very well. You don't really need much skill, although you can get pretty confused if you don't know which way it's facing and you don't have a strategy for trying to find out. You can get confused about which direction and stuff like that. Okay. So still flyaway events are pretty common, but it's pretty easy.
Eddie asks, what if someone uses a drone scrambler to block that signal? What happens to the drone?
Yeah, you might not have an intact drone for very long. But doing scrambling drones just for the sake of it would be illegal because you'd be violating rules about how the spectrum's used.
So the Australian regulator is CASA, the Civil Aviation Safety Authority. What are the basic rules surrounding drones, personal drones, not talking about perhaps ones used at football matches or anything. So for personal drone use, if you want to walk in and buy one, what are the restrictions that you have? Are there any?
Right, so if it's for personal use only, has to be more than 30 metres away from people who are not associated with the activity. So like if flying in the park would be problematic as a result of that because it would be hard to be sure of that. You have to be more than, I believe, 3 nautical miles from a registered airfield, and you have to stay below 120 metres or 400 feet. That's a very important one.
Just so that you don't run into anything. Although...
Yes.
So what are you doing with it? If you can't go to a local park, maybe take it out in the bush, perhaps. I'm sure if there's nobody out there. But even if it's in your backyard... then, well, you've got people living on either side within 30 metres of you, surely. What are you actually doing? Are you, you've got a camera in there? Do they all have a camera in them? They all look down and can film something? Is that what's going on? Well, what's the purpose of having a drone?
Yeah, I first of all, say up front, I'm a drone researcher, and you'd be surprised that although I've used commercial drones for research and played around with them briefly when we first got them into the lab, I'm not a drone enthusiast, but usually You can take all sorts of amazing sweeping selfies as you stand on a headline, a headland, and it flies off into the distance looking back at you, that kind of cinematic photography. A lot of people photograph themselves doing action sports, and they do landscapes in ways that would never be done normally. So there's pretty amazing artistry and skill associated with drones, and I can get them to work, but I cannot achieve the cinematography of good amateur drone users.
So I can imagine real estate agents, that would be very helpful to them, to making the videos that go on their websites to display houses.
Absolutely, and there's people take group photos with them. They're like a flying tripod for some people. They're a pretty versatile photographic platform, and you can have the drone take a photograph of a group, whereas otherwise there'd be somebody standing there with a telephone outside of the group. So there's a lot of interesting things you can do with it.
So if I have one in my backyard, the people next door, on either side perhaps, or up the back, they got every right to say don't fly it because it's within 30 metres of them, and as it flies around close to their fence, they might not want, you know, that film to be taken of their yard. Are they within their rights? What can they do?
Yeah, they'd be. I think if they're inside the structure, now this is probably getting really technical and things that I don't know the answer to, but I suspect if they're inside the structure, their case for complaining might be less, because you are allowed to do it. If you follow the rules, you are allowed to do it. Yeah, but if they're outside in their garden and the drone is closer than 30 metres away, then you know, they would have a reason to complain. And if you didn't respond, I guess they could complain to CASA. I don't hear much about such things, but it certainly will increasingly happen.
Okay. Let's talk about sharks then, because Mark from Warhope mentioned sharks. And that is a good way, isn't it, of sending a drone up. It looks down onto the ocean, and you can see whether there's not only sharks, but whether they're dolphins or whales or all sorts of things close to a beach. This is a really great way of doing it, isn't it?
Absolutely, and schools of salmon as well around here. So there's a fair number of salmon fishermen, like amateur, like on the beach type salmon fishermen, who get the drone up so they can scan along the coastline and see the schools of salmon coming, which are usually hard to see from the shore. So it's a great vantage point for seeing into the water. So it's really good. They're very good for that.
One of the things that always comes up, and you've mentioned it yourself, is the limited time that these drones can stay in the skies. So we're looking at, what, 15, 20 minutes at the most. Is that a battery that you then had to recharge? Or are we looking now at, you know, maybe drones that might be able to stay up for half an hour, an hour? I mean, if people are only taking selfies, it seems an extraordinarily expensive way of doing that. You know, what's the purpose of having a drone, a personal drone, up in the air for half an hour?
It depends on people's perception of cost, but $1,000... for a drone, if you are a keen amateur photographer, I would think that $1,000 for a drone that can take like 5 megapixel, 8 megapixel images, probably they wouldn't perceive that as expensive because of the things they can do with it that they simply couldn't otherwise do. But to your point about endurance, at this sort of amateur hobby grade of stuff, 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, 45 minutes is about the maximum. But when you get into research systems where they have fuel cells, might run with an internal combustion engine, might have a fixed wing drone instead of something with small rotating propellers, the sky's the limit. There have been concepts for drones that fly indefinitely at high altitude using solar panels. So it's anything. That's the nature of drones, is that you've got a lot of design freedom there.
That's for just, you know, using them for yourself for private use. Beyond, say, real estate agents that I mentioned, or maybe looking at salmon as well, what are some of the commercial uses for drones in Australia at the moment?
Well, it's certainly completely changed surveying, particularly of three-dimensional structures. Now you can get a model. You can create a solid model of a three-dimensional structure like an old building, or it's very common in Europe where you've got a lot of old architecture and sort of archaeological sites is you can scan it with lasers and get 1 millimeter accuracy resolution images of areas, huge areas, and produce terabytes of data. So that's something you really couldn't do any other way. Obviously, there's all the cinematography. There's a lot of applications in agriculture because it allows you to check things by drone. Mm-hmm. You know, go a few kilometres into a paddock that you might otherwise have to go through and open gates and those sorts of things. It's just vast, and people are coming up with... I saw some Yahoos that were using them to hunt pigs the other day on YouTube. So there's all sorts of of stuff that's going on. It's a field of innovation. It's a disruptive technology, given everybody some level of air power, and you'll just see more and more.
So I would think, yes, on properties, farms would save a lot of time if you have to go and see, you know, maybe if there's one, yeah, it's a sheep or a cattle missing or whatever, or a head of cattle missing somewhere, or if you want to go and see if there's how much water is in the dam and you don't want to drive all the way down there, then, yeah, this is a great way of doing it, isn't it?
And add a thermal camera, you can do it at night. You can see animals and things much more easily. So you could actually, finding something that's stray or a person that's stray with a drone, you've got a lot more options than a man on foot.
Okay. Jackie says, my friend spent $2,000 on a drone. He had reserves and space around his home. Once he downloaded the software, he couldn't fly it because he lived in a suburb next to the airport. At the moment, it's in the cupboard. Oh, Jackie, it's terrible.
Yes.
How much damage could they do to a plane, do you think? I mean, to a plane like a, you know, something that's flying interstate or internationally.
Quick, silly story. The university I'm at is on the approach trajectory into Parafield Airport, so we can't fly any drones on site, and yet it's full of technology students. And an aeroplane struck something at night, and they didn't know what it was, and the police were all over the campus, and there was questions being asked everywhere. And it turned out when they did the DNA sample on the leading edge of the light aircraft that was hit, it was a fruit bat. So not everything that collides within the air is a drone. They could bring down an aircraft. It's
really?
A little tiny drone meets relatively small aircraft. If it could
Has
get
that
into
happened?
The cockpit. I believe there have been reports of that. There's certainly been a lot of near misses. There's been clowns who have deliberately put aircraft into the airlines, like chasing big aircraft on descent.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
It is a matter of time.
All right. Richo is first up or second up. G'day, Richo.
Hey, g'day.
You use them, but you race them, is that right?
We were working last weekend with the a drone racing team up at an off-road race up at Bowen. It was really exciting.
And how do you do it? How does the racing situation work?
They have bollards. It's very similar to the slalom course, for want of a better term. But the regulations to get that set up through CASA, and we were within a proximity of an airport, so it took us about 6 weeks to get the approvals for the display. And, very, very rigid on where we could fly and what our capacity was. But, it went well. And the general public, they enjoyed it. You know, these racing drones are doing up to 260 kilometres an hour.
So is this any different to racing, I don't want to use the word toy planes, but those planes, model planes that a lot of people still do and control them from the ground, model aircraft.
Yeah,
is it very similar to that?
Well, it is different because the pilots are using FPV, so they've got a set of goggles on.
FPV is being, what's FPV?
First person view.
Oh, okay, right. Okay.
So they're seeing through their goggles as if they're actually on the aircraft.
That sounds fantastic, doesn't it?
So not only were they doing the demonstration for the general public, they had a spare set of goggles where the kids could come up and actually watch it as well. So it was pretty special.
That sounds great. Richo, thanks, mate. I appreciate it. That sounds brilliant, doesn't it, Javan?
Yes, I mean, having that virtual reality view is appealing. There's usually some challenges with the video breaking up periodically and stuff, but there's a lot of technology going into making that better and better.
All righty. Susie, though, has a different opinion. G'day, Susie.
Hi, how are you?
All right. Now, you live in kind of the inner west of Sydney. What happens around your house?
Well, we live next door to a group of townhouses, and there's a young guy in there who has a drone, and he just flies it twice a day, and it's like meters from our windows, and it just makes, it's just torture, really. It makes an absolute racket. The noise of
it's
it.
It's bad enough for you being under the flight path anyway, let alone having that thing right next to you.
A drone as well, that's right. And it's just, I was questioning the legality of the whole thing, whether he's actually allowed to do that. It flies over I don't know how many houses, and just this internal noise that just drives you crazy.
So for how long does it go on?
He plays with it for about half an hour to an hour, I suppose. Okay. Half an hour perhaps.
And have you spoken to him about it?
Look,
I know it's difficult.
Going to investigate with the council to see
what
you can do, to be honest, but I didn't want to sort of cause any problems. I thought perhaps, you know, especially with like all the kids at home homeschooling, he's got lunchtime to do it as well. It wasn't as bad before.
No.
He could do it after school, you know, but now it's lunchtime as well as, so it's driving everybody crazy.
Susie, has he got his mother there that you, or father, you can tap on the shoulder?
Yeah, I don't know that they, I think that, you know, I would have thought that they would have considered other people to start with, so perhaps they're not going to be that open to criticism. I don't know. I haven't broached that one yet, but yeah.
Good luck with it, Susie.
I'm happy to listen to what the legalities are in terms of 30 metres, because it certainly would be 3 metres, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, that might be the time once they stop, just put on your leaf blower and annoy them for a while. Susie.
So the council won't be able to help you, but CASA would be the people to call.
Okay, Susie, so the Civil Aviation Safety Authority.
All right, thank you very much for that.
All right, thank you very much, Susie. But, I mean, do you think the councils are going to be increasingly involved in this sort of thing, though, Siobhan?
Well, I mean, yeah, these things could be a noise, like a nuisance.
Yeah, it's definitely a noise complaint.
There are a lot of sites that actually have no drones policies, like more national park type of areas, because you can end up with a swarm of giant hornets sound wherever you go. It would be annoying.
Indeed. Andrew in Adelaide says, there are tight rules about filming neighbours, but there's no law about neighbours putting up fixed cameras viewing neighbours' yards. Really? I would, again, talk to your local council, Andrew, about that. Andy and a couple of other people have mentioned when that child went missing recently in the Hunter Valley, drones were very important in helping to track that little boy down, weren't they?
Well, there's nothing like... There's a reason why aeroplanes changed everything in war and surveillance and mapping, and getting that vantage point just changes everything.
Mm. Someone said they had a drone fly over a beach, very low, filming people, but unable to do anything about it, which is very concerning. They need more regulation. Are they allowed to fly over beaches? I mean,
They're not allowed to fly over people. They're not allowed to fly within 30 metres of people.
But if they're 30 metres really, in the air, though...
Then it's okay, and probably you'll find that the typical optics on them is more for landscapes. It's a pretty expensive drone that has fancy zoom optics and probably not too much to worry about.
All right. Patrick, though, has one for his grandson. G'day, Patrick.
Good morning, Rod. Old chap, how are you?
Good, mate. Your grandson actually does use it for surf lifesaving.
Yeah, well, I just bought him a new one for his sister's compete in... surf life saving down at Bulleye, and I've bought him a new one so he can fly over them when they go out to surf as a safety precaution, you know, just to watch for those Noah's Arks, which are about down that way.
Indeed, yeah. And has it been useful so far?
I believe it has, yes.
pleased to hear it.
Yes, I bought it because of the safety of the granddaughters and the grandson, you know.
Yeah. All righty. Thanks, Patrick. Appreciate that. It's being used in the right way. What about for home delivery of things? We hear about that, that they can't actually deliver to your door, perhaps, but they can deliver to a local park, and then you go and collect it now. There, is that what we're looking at the moment with these drones? Because if you're not allowed to fly them around a park, do you think commercial use of drones is going to change how people...
I think there's a company called... we won't go into what they're called, but they're associated with one of the bigger companies that does digital stuff. And they're doing some trials of delivery in Brisbane and Canberra. And they actually lower the goods down. But, of course, that's a fully approved operation, and it does come to your door. So you can fly in a park. It's just you need to be very careful with flying in a park that you don't end up with people minding their own business walking through your 30-meter exclusion zone. Okay. So those things do work. They're advertising that they do it. I haven't actually seen it myself. It's kind of low on my interest, but it's going to come. There's a big, it's huge in America. Drones have been doing some fantastic work delivering medicines in places with limited road infrastructure and so on. So there's drones for delivery is actually a really good application.
Okay. A couple of other text messages. What about drone size and power and ability in strong winds? Yeah, if the wind gets up, what happens to your drone?
Well, it certainly happened to my fixed-wing drones of having them blow away and causing enormous problems, fortunately in a very controlled environment where that didn't cause any problems. But, yes, it's wind and weather. For certified pilots of drones, so people have a certificate for that, you actually have to learn how to do aviation weather reports so that you don't accidentally end up flying in dangerous conditions. But these things can always happen. That's the principle of being a pilot, is to be aware of what's happening and not get into difficult situations, which does make the electronics store drones a little bit concerning.
Yeah. Bob in Camberwell says, what about drones being used for industrial or mining survey work to check property boundaries, especially over larger areas, and can the data they collect be legally used in a contract, says Bob. Now, you're not a lawyer, I don't think, Siobhan, but I'm guessing that they are being used in remote areas.
Well, I would imagine that, that surveyors are using drones. So I would imagine if there's surveyors, that their surveying results would be evidence, I would imagine. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a survey, I guess.
Yeah.
But yes, they're very good for it. I've seen them being used for literally mapping a rock face to work out where to implant explosives and all sorts of applications and mine sites, because the ground is not necessarily accessible by wheeled vehicles.
Also, and we talked about the deliveries, more than just pizza or something you might have ordered online, we're talking about medical supplies in the Northern Territory, where perhaps you can't get a truck there, or you can't get a plane to land, or a helicopter or whatever. You can get them in by drone. Although, if they only last, you know, half an hour or so, how are they getting those medical supplies there?
Well, your little rotary wing type of drone that you might buy at the shop, that's got its limits, maybe half an hour, but and carrying something heavy, really not long at all. However, a drone designed for delivery, you'll be able to travel a few kilometres. And if it's a fixed-wing drone, you can fly for 1,000 kilometres if you've got the right design. So there's a constraint more on this commercial small object delivery to your door. That's going to set size. But in an environment like the Northern Territory, which is really big, you could probably send a relatively big drone.
We talked about drones being used in search and rescue work. The Western Australian Police have 40 drones, I think they've got, and 72 qualified drone pilots. So they're really going ahead. Now, is that the same with every state in Australia, or are some states more on the front foot than others?
I would imagine there'd be a mixture of using contractors to fly them and using serving police. There'd be different decisions in different jurisdictions, I guess. The cool one is firemen. So they use, the fire brigades use drones with a thermal camera so they can actually see through the smoke and to see where the fire is so that they can point the hose in the right place, because quite often they find themselves pointing the hose at the wrong thing because they don't actually know where the hot spot is, and the drone can get up and look down and see where the fire is. Same for a bushfire. Great applications.
Well, John of Coburg wants to know about that. Would drones have any use in bushfire fighting, or would conditions be too hot and too oppressive, too dangerous maybe?
The bigger issue is firefighting, other firefighting aircraft flying at low altitude. So that's the real risk. The risk is that you there's another air operation going on that's critical, involving water bombing and manned aircraft doing surveillance. Okay. So that's the limiting factor that's always come up with that.
And Kiri mentions a video which I have not seen, but you want to talk about as well, and that is this video, this single shot, one shot of a bowling alley in Minnesota. What happened? Why is this so special?
Oh, this is a video that was made flying around a bowling alley. Amazing, done in one cut. Is that the one we're talking about?
That's the one we're talking about.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive. I mean, it was, I think the guys who did it got offered a contract in Hollywood or somewhere because of the expert amateur. And that's, again, talking about the gifted amateur with a drone having pretty amazing skills. That was the sort of incident I'm talking about.
Okay. Now, I should point out, unless you are a lawyer, I'm not and you're not, so we can't give legal advice here, but Nigel wants to know something. Good morning, Nigel.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm just wondering what an individual's rights would be to shoot down a drone over your flying over your house with either a rifle, bow and arrow, or a catapult.
Javan Charles is our guest from the University of South Australia. You may need, Nigel, to seek legal advice on that matter.
No, I think it's some of it's relatively clear. If the drone isn't violating any of CASA's rules, it would be illegal to do that, just like it'd be illegal to shoot down an aircraft. Never fire a rifle into the air like that, because the bullet will come down many miles away. So I think generally that's not the correct, taking the law into your own hands is not the correct recourse.
No.
Now, okay. I know it's so frustrating is, to have that, but
can
don't do
you,
that.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't fire bows and arrows. You don't fire guns to start. I mean, we're talking about on a property, perhaps not a house, but maybe on a farm, perhaps. But nevertheless, I don't know what the rules are about discharging firearms in a public place or a private place like that. I would advise against it. But what if you bring the drone down in by some other method?
No, I think in general, you shouldn't interfere with air users. I guess if it was your own drone and it was posing a hazard to others, I guess the preferred weapon would probably be a shotgun with birdshot rather than a rifle.
All right, there you go, Nigel.
If you're on a property.
But if it's somebody flying a drone over your property and hovering there, what right do you have to bring that drone down or to stop that person from doing it?
Not enough of a lawyer to answer that, but my understanding is just in general, there might be a whole bunch of rules and a whole bunch of laws, but don't interfere with air users and air traffic.
All right, fair enough. Tony, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Rod. Got an inquiry which I'm unsure of as to whether there's a legal use for police or paramilitary to disperse like capsicum spray over protesting crowds by using drones. Has that been done, or is that even possible?
Interesting question. What can they be used for by law enforcement, Siobhan?
Okay, so our military could not use it because that would be chemical warfare, so we don't do that. Police do use things like that. Usually I think it would be a question of volume, in terms of like discharging large amounts of tear gas. And I think it's getting into that area of weaponizing systems and firing canisters from drones. It's all got, seems to have the potential to go into an uncomfortable area where you could really hurt somebody and be asking, did the drone do it or did the operator do it? So I think people would be quite hesitant to do that.
See what happens. It's the sort of thing that perhaps the laws and restrictions come in after it has been done once rather than beforehand. What about at the Olympics? What about the extraordinary drone display we saw at the Olympics where they were lit up and it made the globe? That was spectacular, wasn't it?
As an engineer looking at that, what's amazing is to achieve the reliability necessary to get that many systems all up in the air, all coordinated at once with their relatively limited endurance. It is amazing.
Yeah. David in Williamstown says commercial drones fitted with infrared camera could be used to search for people who've fallen overboard from ships. Surely that would be very helpful as well, especially in the dark.
Well, that would certainly for military type drones. The thermal camera is a standard fit, and that would be a man overboard drill would probably include that these days, I would think.
Okay.
Haven't been on a ship for a while, but yes.
All right. James in Pakenham, and again, we don't know whether you know the answer here. Does CASA have any rules about flying drones over sacred Indigenous land, like, for example, Uluru?
Sorry, don't know the answer to it. I know that when I've been on defence ranges, we've been directed to keep things that fly away from things that had significance to the Indigenous population.
Okay, good advice there. Greyman says Border Force use them to patrol the coast, and that saves an awful lot of time and effort and money sending ships up and down the coast. If you can just send the drone out, that really helps, doesn't it?
Carbon dioxide as well. The drones, one of the great advantages of using drones for those routine operations is that they use dramatically less fuel.
What about this then? Drones with flamethrowers. I'm worried about that, but this was used in China to eradicate wasps. Now, that's, again, you don't want to get too close to those wasps, but if you can do it with a drone, that's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, don't do it in summer here. But that is a good example, though, of using a robot for something like that. That's a classic. It's a dangerous job, and you don't want to be anywhere near it. But what I would warn people about weaponizing drones is that you better be pretty sure that your trigger systems and safeties are in place properly, or you might be the first thing that gets incinerated.
Oh, dear. All right. Now, your colleagues at the University of South Australia have looked at drones not necessarily replacing baby monitors, but they've got a new one there that uses remote sensing imaging systems to detect heart and respiratory rates in humans. How's that going to work?
Oh, yeah, that's actually my project, and it's a fun project. We did it with a Canadian company, and it works. There's a blush mechanism. Our faces blush every time our hearts beat, and a drone can see it from a distance under normal lighting conditions. Yes, so you can measure a heart rate, blood oxygen saturation, and breathing rate, and with some uncertainty, blood pressure even.
Okay.
So it does work. It sounds like science fiction, but it does work. It's a real thing. The question is what to do with it.
Well, one of the ways is looking for people perhaps in buildings that have collapsed or after earthquakes, that drones can possibly measure a person's breathing and heart rate from 60 metres up. That would be an extraordinary development, wouldn't it, to see if people are still alive in there?
So we did some pretty weird experiments with that where we had a mannequin and a student. And the difference between them is that students have a heartbeat. So the drone could actually detect which was the mannequin, which was the student on the basis of that. And we also did an experiment where we showed that the drone could detect a person who was covered by debris from the very subtle movements of their chest. So
okay.
If they were alive, it could detect them. So those are really getting into detailed search and rescue type of scenarios, but they're very useful because after an earthquake, and or after a tsunami or something. That's the kind of thing that happens.
Exactly right. Someone has texted in, no drones in New South Wales National Parks. We're just about out of time, but John, again, we're not lawyers. We can't answer these questions, but what did you want to know, John?
Yeah, if a drone comes down into your property, who is the owner of that drone? Is it you, the property owner, or the person who actually was flying the drone?
It's a very interesting question, John. Any ideas, Javan?
I think it's the person who owns it. Yeah. I think there would be an obligation to return it.
I would hope so.
Unless it's claimed, unless nobody ever shows up for it.
Yes, it's unclaimed for 3 months or something. Exactly right.
Yeah.
We've got about a minute to go. What haven't we thought of? What's the future of drones? How do you see them improving our lives?
I'm not sure a lot of things recently have dramatically improved our lives. I think they've changed our lives. I think drones do create the opportunity to streamline a lot of logistics so that you use less fuel and those sorts of things, get things quicker. But that involves not going to the shop. So it's interesting to see what automation will do to people's lives. This is just the digital disruption and automation together. I don't know. I really don't know how much it will change our lives.
We'll find out. We'll look back in a few years' time and think that, I remember Javan told us about it. Javan Shah, Professor of Sensor Systems at the University of South Australia. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Rod.
Overnights with Rod Quinn on ABC Radio.